Log Talk Radio.
Welcome to I Am Resistance and the End Times. Once more. I hope you can hear me. I don't know, because technology's not my friend. This is, as always, Jeff the Inquiring Sage, slave to industrial civilization, the live city, you, to you, to me, to us. It's been a while, and you know why it's been a while? I don't know why, because nobody's listening, and that's okay. And I don't care, because I don't get paid to do this, but I don't want to get paid. That's my point. I don't want to get paid at all. But it's been a while. It's been a while. You know what I needed to do over this last, I think it's been May since I've done a radio blog, is observe. I spent a lot of time observing and reading and thinking and studying and, you know, doing what I do best, reading, thinking, studying, observing, not judging, being mindful, practicing, you know, the being orientation. I needed to watch and see and just see what's going on in this time of great difficulty, of great polarity, they say, great upheaval, great instability, great hatred and great outrage. I see a lot of outrage. Everybody's outraged and then going to Starbucks with me. I just watch. I watch and I listen and I listen to the stories, all the stories, lots of stories being told about this and that and El Presidente and everything El Presidente says. It gets, repackaged and reframed in whatever ideology you want to have presented to you on your Facebook feed or your telephone or whatever. So we're getting all of this stories, lots of stories, and I just observe all the stories from the every side of the perspective. I just watch these perspectives and I listen to these perspectives and I try not to align myself with any perspective really, but to, you know, to see truth in a cloud storm of lies, which is language itself, which adds to an even more interesting, deep philosophical insight. But I'll leave that for something else. So I think what brought me back to wanting to express myself with just that, wanting to express myself. I leave the trappings of my normal reading of the dedication. I dedicate this blog to nothing, to the living world that is being destroyed, to the millions and millions being murdered by pollution, to the millions and millions that are enslaved, to the billions that are enslaved. I count myself among them. I dedicate this to you and myself and the living world that we must fight to defend, but have no wherewithal to do so because we know what will happen. And that's what got me a lot of thinking going on, was the fact of civilization itself and what great lengths it will go to keep itself progressing. Progress, progress. Progress is the equivalent to genocide, ecocide, you know, the wholesale destruction of the living world and the domestication and the eradication of anything that stands in the way. And of course, you know, the constant manufacturing, the industrial manufacturing of livestock, which is us, or the livestock that we consume, that the machine then consumes, which is us, as we see the cycle goes on. And that we see anyone that is inferior as an impediment, so we make them inferior. We turn them into criminals. We turn them into race. We turn them into gender, and we criminalize them when it suits us, and then we can eradicate them wholesale. Or we just literally give them no protection from the system that has created them. So we create them to, in fact, provide the cannon fodder for the system to kill. There's no, as we would say, humanity to the system, of course. There's no love or compassion in it. It is a mindless cruelty that is what we create. That is the self. That is the self we inhabit. It is the nature of cruelty is to be disconnected from the what is. You know, so we want to solve problems. We want to feel good. We want to do what society tells us to do so we can have a happy life. And that leaves us, of course, wanting, because there's no such thing, and it's an illusion, a lie, a delusion. And so we fill our time. We exercise, but we don't move. We eat, but we have no nutrition. Our minds are a wasteland of distraction and disconnection. We are addicted to thought. We are addicted to consciousness, this disease that says I have to have a filter from which to experience the world. It's fascinating to observe. It's fascinating to see and experience. And it is timeless, no question about it. I've just been reading this, just menagerie of books and literature and listening to their stories and you know, distilling some insight from so much of the mystics, of the authors that are out there trying to reach us, and we reach them. And some are there to distract us further, to dissuade us from insight, to have us believe, be live, right? To follow this ideology, which is that's what we are best at, keeping ourselves in the virtual reality of ideology. So it's for us to see that for what it is. To see it for what it is to help us see. That seeing is, for lack of a better word, the very nature of to be empowered in a non-egocentric or self-absorbed way, to just see. And someone asks me, students, young people ask me, how do I see? I say, you just see the forest for the trees, as the old cliche goes. The what is always there. It's when we, as Socrates said, Plato, we sweep away the dust of ignorance. Is it the dust of ignorance, or is it the delusion of consciousness of separation, this void that we feel in the egocentric, letting go of that and being in that void. That void is connectivity, but it doesn't have a narrative. That narrative isn't presupposed. So we're like, how am I supposed to make sense of this? That very how leaves us vulnerable, powerfully vulnerable, because we're already terribly damaged anyway. Post-traumatic stress from the domestication process, as Irving Goffman called it, the mortification process. Very powerful, very painful. We are marooned in time. So I'm reading this fascinating book called The Dead Do Not Lie, Exterminate All the Brutes. It's a book by Sven Lindqvist, a Swedish author. I've never heard of him before. I somehow stumbled upon this book about a year and a half ago, and I didn't read it until recently. And it has been quite a whirlwind. I'm not all the way done with it, but by any means, I'm not even halfway done. But it is just permeated my mind because it's very strangely written compared to what I'm used to scholarly-wise. He is a scholar by training, a historian, I believe. But he writes it very opaquely, very... Of course, it's translated from Swedish to English very well done so far that I can tell. I mean, but it's been a journey, and so what he's doing in the book is following, it appears, again, I'm not sure. He's following the path of, in this first one, The Dead Do Not Die, Exterminate All Brutes. Exterminate All Brutes is a phrase from Joseph Conrad's The Heart of Darkness. And so he's retracing, I think, Conrad's journey in his own life while he's writing The Heart of Darkness, among other pieces that he's writing. And he tells us the story of how he finds these characters, and if you know anything about the book, I've read parts of it, and I've seen the interpretations of it, and I've listened to it, and it's quite a powerful tale, although very terse. It's not an easy read, in a sense, because it's someone telling you a story to these other people, and it's him sort of waxing it, you know, and then, you know, so he's telling you this story, and then these anecdotes of his travels in Africa. The Heart of Darkness is him being this character, Marlowe, who ends up working for this company to be a steamboat guy in Africa, and, you know, it's quite a, you know, and he meets Kurtz, who we know is more Colonel Kurtz from Apocalypse Now, which is a very different interpretation of it. But yeah, it's also his, so he's traveling, so this author, Sven Lindqvist, is traveling in Algeria, retracing, I think, the steps of Joseph Conrad, the Polish author. And he writes by number, so he'll be like 31, 32, so he'll write, you know, like three or four paragraphs, chapter 32, or, you know, whatever, 33. And I've known German authors to write that way, which is interesting. And then, you know, you just follow through it. He doesn't explain a lot to you, so you kind of, it's like watching a foreign film. Like if you go watch Blade Runner, the new Blade Runner doesn't explain a lot to you, so you kind of have to be like, what's happening here? I don't know what to think. Oh, good. That's probably the best thing. So he goes in and out from talking about Conrad and his own journey and then the book, and then, you know, it's just a journey. But the point is, I'd like to read to you a passage that is fascinating to me. I just read it today, and it really resonated with me. It should take a few minutes, but just follow this with me. So it's in like chapter 86, and he had just faced what in his mind was death. The actual author, Sven Lindqvist, I think. And he's, again, a very well-educated person. Spent lots of years in school. Clearly has, I think, a PhD equivalent and such. So he says, death was not included in my education. In 12 years of schooling and 15 years at various universities, I've never given any education in the art of dying. I don't think death was ever mentioned. Even now, afterward, after arriving in Artil, which is the place he's going, and having slept it all off, showered and filled my body with reservoirs of water, even now, when the terror has slackened its grip, I think it particular that death is never mentioned, never even mentioned. The Norwegian philosopher Thorndsen said that to think about anything except death is an evasion. Society, art, culture, the whole of human civilization is nothing but evasion. One great collective self-delusion, the intention of which is to make us forget all the time we are falling through the air, at every moment getting ever closer to death. Some of us get there in a few seconds, others in a few days, others in a few years. But that is a matter of indifference. The point in time is a matter of indifference. What is decisive is that the end awaits us all. What should I do during my remaining time? Thorndsen would answer nothing. He believed that to be born is to jump off a skyscraper. But life is not jumping off a skyscraper. It is not 7 seconds you have, but 7 decades. That is enough to experience and achieve a good deal. The shortness of life should not paralyze us, but stop us from deluded, unconcentrated living. The task of death is to force man into essentials. That is how I felt when I was not yet 30. I had long a way to go down the paving stones below. Long way down to the paving stones below. I did not even see them. Now I can see them rushing up toward me and feeling myself falling headlong. Then I realized something was missing in my education. Why have I never learned how to die? Oh, that's so good. Oh, that's so good. I like Sven. I gotta write this guy and be like, dude, are you still alive? Because your writing really is fascinating to me, and, you know, I like writing. Yeah, I mean, you know, but why? Because there's a lot of stories and ways to explain it, and it's, you know, I think he knows as well as anything is that civilization wants to keep us, especially those that it wants to use, focused on being of use. You don't want your livestock to be focused on anything but distracting themselves by the fact that they are, in fact, livestock, right? So you don't talk about death, again, but death is very much a narrative premised in time, right? So, I mean, we could go beyond that question is, why doesn't anyone ever talk to me really about time, right? About this connection, about this separate consciousness that says I can only know through thought as opposed to that seeing, right? But that's off the beaten path, right? That doesn't resonate with our minds that says I want answers and I want to feel good and I want a path and I want someone to tell me how to do it and I can just follow it and, you know, live my life relatively easily without having to fret about it, right? I just want to be where I were, simple creatures, no question about it. Complexity is not our friend, but we're brought into this matrix that is distracting us from the what is and poisoning us and murdering us in so many ways. It's like you know, Daniel Quinn called it the culture of maximum harm. There's just no end to it. And in reading this book, you know, the Dead Do Not Die, you know, he talks a lot about the imperialism of the late 1800s, right before the 20th century, right, which is just what we did to Africa in that century was just atrocity above atrocity. And he's referencing what Conrad is experiencing with these expeditions that are going on by the British, who is the ultra superpower of the time, as well as other powers, the Germans, the Belgians. So he references what the Belgians do, which is, you read anything about if you read anything about that time and what the, you know, King Leopold had done on behalf of the Belgian state, was, as well as the British, was just wholesale genocide. One of those we don't talk about because it wasn't in the 20th century. It wasn't done, you know, with the equipment that we expect it to be, which is, you know, like in the Holocaust. But it was. It was just, it was exactly the same. And he, Sven Lindqvist, shows beautifully how the supremacy of the technology of the Europeans, along with their profound imperial superiority in their mind, I wouldn't even call it racism. It was way beyond racism. They created race, the Europeans, right? They created the very idea of it. It's just that these people were immediately designated as, you know, savages, whether it was, you know, the Native American peoples or, again, was it just the whites? Yeah, probably, you know, but again, it was their kind, and they had, it was their ideology that they were going to, I mean, they were already cut off. I mean, to say that these indigenous peoples were any less civilized, I think, is just absolutely incorrect. You know, civilization is all over, you know, at this time. This is about disconnection. This isn't about the primitive psychology, right? And this is just about wholesale genocide of anything that stood in the way of their ideologies that were, you know, propelling them forward. There was just that progress idea, the what would become the American manifest destiny, or is there, in fact, the Lebensborn he references in the German, which is, you know, the elbow room idea, you know, that space, that we need more space. So the Lebensborn, yeah, you know, it spawns all these ideologies that basically are just self-fulfilling prophecies to do what you want, you know. And these creatures, whether it's animals, which again is what they akin to the savages to anyway, so they said they're not like us, so we'll just, you know, eradicate them and get them out of our way if that's necessary. If not, you know, again, you know, we don't want to waste the ammunition, which, you know, can be kind of costly. But it's also, he touches on how we start to see how being able to kill at a distance with long rifles and artillery really plays this into this metaphor of the invisible man, of being invisible and just being able to do whatever you want, which is that H.G. Wells story that he ties in wonderfully. Fascinating book. Highly recommend it. But it just, again, makes me think of how insidious civilization has, and what it does to us to keep us so divisive and lost in this, you know, Facebook world of trying to get our ideologies coherent and right. And it's the slaves, you know, not liking the other slaves, whether it's alt-left or alt-right or whatever political view, or a nationalist or white nationalist, or, you know, an African nationalist, or, you know, whether it's a Nigerian, you know, rebel trying to stop, you know, oil companies, or the so-called ISIS fighter fighting for his caliphate, or, you know, it's all just the same thing. It's all the same thing. Now, some of it is true, I think, truly rebellion against industrial civilization, against an ideology that is so pervasive and so powerful that it literally dominates every aspect of our lives. To think otherwise is just, we really do that. We're like, that's just insanity. And when, again, if you've ever listened to my blog, you know my thoughts about what that is, insanity. Insanity is civilization. And the whole idea of mental illness is that created by the same people that created race, to say, oh, you're different, and that if you don't fit in, then you're crazy, and we must modify you. We must modify you. How do we modify you? Oh, now we have so many ways, it's not even funny. And you will conform, or you will be killed. And that's kind of the reality of it. You're So how do we create that insurrection? You know, seeing, I think, is a way. Of course, I always reference my beloved Feral Consciousness by Julian Langer. Cannot recommend that enough as a place to spend some time examining, you know, the constructs, examining a way to feralize ourselves, to deconstruct things. And I'll read a brief passage in our time remaining from my, I've read this before, I'll read it again. What typifies the mental state is a consciousness bound in ideology, consciousness mediated from authentic being, with the narratives of these mental states being formed of hyper-civilized angst, epitomized state of civilized culture. If we follow Foucault's assertion that within the ideological apparatus of civilization for thousands of years, the ones who are most revered have been ones who display the highest symptoms of what we call madness. What we can derive from this is that the cultural form known as civilization is a form of madness, a schizophrenic psychosis form in which life amalgamates to fetishized symbolic object relations where the authentic being is denied in place of nihilism and bad faith. Oh, thank you, Julian. That's so true. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful prose. We are lost to this madness, and we can only think in representation of symbolic relationships between subject and object. Good stuff. Good stuff. The real world has been fetishized in symbolic form and placed perpetually out of reach within this systematic framework. This is the nightmarish epitomization of civilization. Oh, thank you. I love you, Julian. You British bastard. Oh, how I love it. And it's excellent. It's only like $5. Buy it. I'll buy it for you. Just contact me. I think I can afford that. Of course, only 12 people listened to my last show. That was months ago. So I'll post it on Facebook and all 5 of you can listen if you want. You know. That's okay. So I only got a couple minutes left of this rant. And it's been ranty. So, you know, you can just shut it off because you're like, forget that fool. And I understand. I'm a voice in the darkness. Just talking shit. I don't know. Not really. I guess. I don't know what that means. Let me talk in the sun. Let me read a bit from you, from my Krishnamurti. If you've not read Krishnamurti, you should. It's very good. Krishnamurti is very good. And I have a minute and a half left, so I'm going to read a little bit of this. You see and I do not see. Why does this happen? I think it happens because one is involved in time. You do not see things in time. I see in time. Your seeing is an action for your whole being, and your whole being is not caught in time. You do not think of gradual arrival. You see something immediately. The very perception acts. I'll skip ahead. The man who sees something totally, sees life totally, must obviously be out of time. Ooh, outside of time. I'm out of time. And outside of time is the primitive dimension that we're all connected to. That's instinct. Until next time. If there is a next time. Probably. I wish you all well in civilization. I hope you will think deeply, rebel, insurrection. Think of anti-fragile. It's interesting. Interesting concept. Maybe we'll talk about that sometime. I wish you all a happy thing.